This is the Modern CTO Podcast.
Dude, how are you doing today? Are you excited?
Yeah, it's my first podcast, so happy to get started.
What?
With you. Yeah.
This is it. We're recording right now.
Okay.
Like, we just roll. This will be the your favorite pie. Like, I love doing this podcast, right? Yeah, so it's pretty much all downhill from here. Okay. No, I guess, so, like, to be candid, it's one of the things that, like, I did the podcast for over a year before I'd been on anyone else's podcast. And one thing that they did when I started going, and I did like 10 podcasts in 1 month, like other podcasts that weren't mine. And they had, they all did this like long intro and they read my bio before the podcast started.
Yeah.
And I was like, and then they asked me some big, deep question. That'd be like me reading like your list of life accomplishments and then be like, how do you do it, Chris? It was like way too heavy. So I realized, oh, I didn't even know like how to do a podcast. I just wanted to talk to people.
Yeah. So we're not going to do that?
No.
Okay.
No, good. Sir.
All right.
Nope. We do have a new addition to the office though. We started, we built like a little set and we started like flying people down sometimes to do them in person. So that's something new we're doing for the year.
I am in a very cold Chicago and I was not given the opportunity to fly down to Florida. So.
Dude, you shut up.
Second appearance. You know,
second appearance, yeah. So what is it exactly that you do, like on a day-to-day basis?
It's there's no typical day. So to tell you a little bit of background of Connemara. So Connemara, we're a consulting firm in the engineering space for capital markets. So Connemara itself doesn't have a very large technology footprint. Because we're consultants, we're basically guns to hire. So every day is kind of driven by whatever our current customer load is, and kind of what they're looking to build. And so today I've been writing a lot of Go code and debugging a lot of Go code. But yesterday I was doing something completely different. So it's, as a CTO, I end up having to write a lot of code. But a lot of meetings in there too. Maybe that's what makes me a CTO, is all the meetings that get laid on to my regular engineering duties.
I love that people always will say, like, what's the quickest way to become a CTO? And I'll say, quit your job and start a company and you can be one tomorrow.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Print out some business cards. And then I think for myself, you know, I've been here at Connemara for, since 2005. Which is a long time for a technology gig. I've stepped into the CTO role, but it's kind of a role by circumstance. I think that kind of starting as a regular engineer, writing software and kind of understanding a little bit about the business and from a higher level perspective, you'll eventually figure it out and you'll be able to take on those responsibilities, whether you're ready for them or not. You'll figure it out real quick. So
do you get to meet with customers?
Yes. Yeah. And that's probably a unique thing that our engineers have to do. In fact, when we hire, we look for highly talented engineers, but we're also looking for engineers that are interested and motivated to talk to the customer, figure out what their requirements are, and help them accomplish whatever business goals they have. So that was something that I definitely had to figure out. And I think that having done, you know, before Connemara, I worked at a very large company and I was a Java developer too, I think. And so all you're doing is, you know, writing Java code and passing your tests. And I wanted to be more involved in the regular product development lifecycle. And I was looking for opportunities to do that. And consulting, you get thrown right in there. So that gave me the opportunity to kind of scratch that itch in terms of figuring out, you know, how do you write software? How do you accomplish business goals with software and get above just a regular editor from time to time?
So do you guys like actually make exchanges? Like I know you do a lot of stuff in the financial services, but that seems kind of weird. Like, isn't there just like a handful of exchanges? Like, how do you make exchanges?
There's a lot of exchanges. So we're not just in the exchange space. When I say capital markets, it's kind of a slice of what's commonly called the fintech space, but we're not necessarily like in the payments business. Our clients could be like a couple of traders that have an idea and they need us to implement an automated solution for them, like an algo. Or it could be a startup exchange who has a trade that they want to be able to make or make on behalf of an industry, and they need to be able to build an exchange from scratch. To much larger institutional investment firms, where they might have an internal matching solution, or they'll want to integrate with one of the, you know, the main exchanges that are out there. But yeah, man, we're building all the technology that allows you from, you know, click to trade to reporting that trade. We do projects all along that stream of work.
And you've been there for like what, over 10 years now, so you must like it.
Yeah. Yeah, I do. And I think part of it is I get bored very quickly. So it's nice to be able to have this cadence where a long project for us is maybe a couple of years. And that's a long project. Our typical engagement is much less than that. You know, 6 to 9 months is a good sized project for us. So we are in that capital market space, but there's so many different pieces to that, that I'm able to see a lot of variety. And I think that's what's kept me around. That coupled with, you know, just working for a small firm, really enjoying working with the management team and the developers that we have. That's just kind of kept me, you know, interested and really comfortable in this space.
You guys use Slack?
We do. Yeah. Yeah. I turned it off because I knew it'd be dinging me.
Yes. Yes. So I was talking about this morning. Because we do the show, I have to put my phone in Do Not Disturb all the time, right?
Yeah.
And so then I started to like learn about how Do Not Disturb works. And then I ended up putting my computer, you can like do this hack where you do it from like 12:01 a.m. to like 12. Basically, right. You set it in a 24-hour loop. So like Do Not Disturb is always happening on your desktop.
Right.
And so I've done that for like a year. But then over the past couple of weeks, I couldn't figure out like why I was still getting notifications and Do Not Disturb. Because apparently they'll still come up, it just won't light your phone up. Like it won't disturb you in the sense that it like lights your phone up. The notifications will still be there, like if you press on it, you know?
Yeah.
It'll like still be all stacked up, which is like equally as stressful, right? Right? Because you put your phone in Do Not Disturb when you're trying to do something else, and you need to check the time, and then you see like 8 things happen.
Yeah, what did I miss? There must be something really bad. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So then I was like, all right. So after I emailed Tim Cook and realized that I just didn't understand how it worked, which was humbling. I always love doing that type of stuff. Then I went to go into my notification settings and I was like, you know what? Let's just see what happens if I turn off all notifications.
Yeah.
So I've turned off all notifications except calendar and text. Nice. And so, cause like I have 2 kids and a wife, like I need my text to like notify me.
Yeah.
And I need calendars for like, I don't miss my meetings, like this amazing podcast, right?
Sure.
But I wonder, like, I feel so much more free and it's only been like a half a day.
That's a life hack.
That's going to be like,
that's a life hack. It's right a life there. Hack. Yeah.
Yeah. Because when you go into the Slack, everything's there.
Yeah.
And what I was noticing is that, you know, I look at the Slack messages, I think about how I'm going to respond, but then I like, my brain's really fast, right? You can look at it and think about what the response is. It's like just a reactionary behavior.
Yeah.
Involuntary behavior. And then you have to wait till later to respond. So you're like doing the work twice. And I was like, pick up my phone 150 times a day anyways. Like I'm not going to miss the stuff. So I'm just, I don't know. What do you think of that?
You know, we've had Slack for a long, long time. We had Campfire. Did you ever use Campfire?
Oh yeah. DHH. And,
yeah. So Campfire was great because it could play sounds. I mean, that's what we're looking for. It was just goofing off as a team is what we can do with these things. And Campfire was great because you could do sounds. Slack, they got rid of the sounds, which is probably the smart thing to do. And we're at a point now where I have a ton of channels because I'm involved in different projects and things. But we're so deep into this post DevOps world. So it's not just us, it's all of our bots that are talking too. And, you know, actually before this, I was, we're kind of looking at a GitHub outage right now. And so we're getting all of our notifications late, but it's basically hammering all of our channels. And so we're trying to figure out, how do we do with this world we live in, where we have all these bots that are telling us, hey, there's a pull request you need to look at, or hey, this build's broken, or hey, your dependencies are out of date. How do you manage that? You need to capture that stream elsewhere than when you're trying to solve a difficult problem, you know, with a team that's, you know, across the country or across the world. You don't want a bot interjecting to say, hey, build's broken, while you're trying to have a conversation. So I wish there was a playbook for how to properly use Slack. Maybe someone has a book out for that, but that's something we've been kind of figuring out, because just like what you're saying with the notifications, I mean, it's useful, but it's to a point where we're saturated with all of our various
they infect every part of our lives.
Yeah.
Because there's like, I guess, because we're trying to like work this thought out right now live, like, I guess we have to ask ourselves a question of, does this style of notification deserve to interrupt my stream of consciousness? Does it deserve my attention in real time? Like, we'll have to start sub segmenting our attention span versus like, can it interrupt me, or like, is it worth it? Like, we'll have right. to decide that, because we need them to stack up. We need the bots to stack up their list and their queue, so that we can, when we're ready to go in there and work on that,
right.
we can see everything that we need to know. But we shouldn't let it control us. We should take control, and we should control the technology.
Yeah. So some of the things that we've done is, like, let's say that I'm working on a project. I'll create a channel for the project. And then once it's, you know, we have alerts and things, I'll create a project dash alerts channel. And that's where a bot's going to throw us all kinds of, hey, there's an error that's being logged or something. And then because we're working not with just engineers, but we're also working with project stakeholders. So maybe it's my boss, Jim, who's a CEO. He wants to know what's going on with the project. If he jumps into a channel that's full of GitHub alert, like, it's just overwhelming. So we have a dedicated channel that's for, you know, project dash dev. And that's where all of our GitHub alerts are. And that's usually where I'm haunting, because I want to see activity in GitHub. But I still have the other channel where I can talk to the project manager or any business analysts and kind of have a quiet place. But I think what Slack needs to figure out is that I'm on all of those channels, and on my left, I've got my little bar of all my channels, and it's I'm still seeing that there's some activity going on, even though it probably doesn't require my attention, but it's distracting me away from what I probably really need to be working on. So I don't think this problem's going away. I think it's just going to get worse.
Exactly. I think we're going to need, like, it's just going to fall on us to yeah. figure out how to control our focus, because it's like the frog in boiling water. I was thinking, when I disabled these notifications this morning, I was having breakfast. I was telling my wife, and I said, I wonder what life's going to be like. And I'm like, shit, I'm 32 years old. I was like, I lived for 27, 25 years without any of this stuff.
Right. Right.
Like, it'll just be like it was before, where I decide that, okay, I'm going to go. Like, I was even thinking about Xbox when I was, you know, 15, like right. people would send me messages. And when I chose to do Xbox, when I chose to go online to play, I focused on my online world. I had my messages, invites, people wanting to play games. Like, right. and I just dealt with it in that mindset. But what's happening now is, like, there's no peace. Like, there's no peace. There's no, like, here's my window of time where I will not be interrupted. And I think the argument for that is, like, every great thing that we've gotten up into this point has had the benefit of uninterrupted deep work. Like, that's how we got the technology. Like, we couldn't have ever got here without that uninterrupted deep work.
Yeah. Yeah. But we're in a world now where, you know, we're writing software that's typically a hosted service. And one of our offerings at Connemara is a operations and support package. And that's that segment of our business is something that I'm involved in, but isn't necessarily my direct responsibility. But we have folks that are on call, and they need to know when services are going down. And I will say, over the past 10 years, I've seen monitoring systems be highly effective to be able to let us know within, you know, a second or so, hey, this thing isn't behaving properly. And because we have those tools that are willing to alert us that quickly, there's an expectation that someone's listening on the other end of that. So it's, well, the best vacation that I ever had in my honeymoon is when I didn't have my phone on. And it's like, that was a free thing. But I was telling everyone, oh, I had this great vacation. You guys got to try it. I just had to get rid of my phone. And it's a weird thing to think about, but that's kind of where we're at right now.
Yeah, it's also weird because we have a biological incentive. Like I was listening, like Simon Sinek, I have one of his books up here somewhere.
Yeah.
Getting good at pointing without looking.
It's good.
Leaders eat last. But right? That was pretty on point. It's like, boom, got a unicorn, ampersand, because I like that with Ruby. And I like blocks. And then, so.
You could be a weatherman. That's perfect.
I could be a weatherman. Yeah. Yes. And over here we have product development. I don't even know what I was saying anymore, but we got the biological, synaptic feedback. Like we get that hit of dopamine when we get those notifications. Simon says like the bing, the buzz, the zip, the pop or whatever.
Yeah.
And so like we can know that it's not good for us and we could still do it.
Yeah, totally.
Like brownies.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Or social media in general. And 2020, here we are. Yeah.
Yeah. What's your media diet look like?
It's pretty trimmed. My lovely wife is fielding family Facebook responsibilities for us. So I removed myself from Facebook a few years ago, but here we have an obligation to be available on Facebook to know what's going on with our family and friends. So she's playing my proxy for me, which is great. I was on Twitter for a while and I've kind of scaled back on that. And I have LinkedIn for professional reasons, but it's pretty well trimmed. I try to keep up to date with various blogs that I haunt. Like Hacker News is a really good resource for me to figure out what's going on. But unfortunately, my way of consuming Hacker News is to have a Slack channel where I'm piping in Hacker News. So maybe that's not the right way to do it, but but it's it's a great feed. So that's kind of where I've been at. But yeah, there was a time where I was fully into, Twitter and just Twitter and Facebook at the same time. And it's too much, a little overwhelming. Needed to take that break. And I miss the days when Google had their reader, because that was more my flow, but that's not a thing anymore. So, but there's plenty of RSS readers out there that are pretty good.
Yeah, they turn off a lot of products. Like there was actually a website that started tracking them, like all the products they sunset. It's like hundreds.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, and that affects us. They have a really great service for jobs, Google Hire. And we discovered it maybe 6 months ago. And it was super useful. We were scheduling interviews. We were getting feedback. And they're sunsetting it. So we love Google. We use the Google domain stuff, but this has happened a few times now where there's a really awesome service and they're getting rid of it. So it's got to build your own. That's the solution. Right? That's why we're engineers, right?
Right. Just build it yourselves. And usually they're doing that because they couldn't get it like profitable, which usually means there's someone else in the market who's also doing a pretty good job at it too.
Yeah. Yeah. And for us, we would gladly pay, it would happen to be, I think it was maybe free because we had the Google domain, but it was such a great thing. We would gladly, if they monetized it in a second, but
I bet you it's something stupid too. I bet you it's like some team estimated it would take X millions of dollars and they were off by something and it just got cut by someone somewhere because they just saw, oh, we didn't achieve this metric in this time. I mean, when you're that big, like, that's why the best products end up coming from these founders that like they build something, they're in love with it and they don't quit no matter how hard it gets. And then you end up with like Tesla.
Yeah.
Right. I have a good one for you. So one of the things we do a lot is we ask this Elon Musk Tesla question at the end of the episodes, right? So much so like when I forget to ask it, I'll get people that reach out to me on LinkedIn and they're like, don't give up on the Musk question, or you forgot to ask it on this episode. I'm like, I don't know, just sometimes it's not like standard. I try to just have a conversation. I like that question.
Yeah.
But we just booked the CTO of Ford like coming on the show. And I was like, I don't know if that'd be so rude if I asked him the Tesla question.
You know, he's getting asked it every day, though. I think it's fine.
Is it? Is he? You think it's okay?
Absolutely. I mean, shouldn't they be asked? They should be asked.
I guess. I don't know. It's like bringing someone over. I guess if I did bring someone over to my house and I was like, hey, it would be normal to talk about other people in the market, right?
Yeah. I mean, we're this capitalist age. If you are an executive at Ford, shouldn't you be challenged? You know?
That's true. It's just that I'll be like, all right, I have a question. Hypothetically, the CEO of SpaceX, Elon Musk.
Right. Is he a Tesla too? I didn't.
Tesla? Oh, yeah. Batteries? Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I always want to like, you know, you want to make people feel comfortable. You want to like, you know, have good conversation.
Sure.
So yeah, I'll get him to smoke some weed. It'd be like the CEO of Tesla did it.
Yeah. It's that kind of podcast. We're all doing it.
but we're in Florida, so I would have to be in California for that one to be okay.
Oh, we're in Illinois. So,
what is it like there? Is weed legal there?
It is. So it is February 25th and it became legal on the first of the year. And
okay.
It wasn't, and I think all the states, I used to live in Washington. Before that I lived in Oregon during their rollouts it's a shortage. So it's interesting if you read about it, like it helps the black markets, you know, this type of thing, because more people are interested in it, but they can't find it. So they go back to the black markets. So I don't know. Talk to me in a year. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. I just watched a movie this weekend, with like Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah.
It's like a new one out right now. And it was quite possibly the most interesting directing of a movie. Like the format of it, like the layout. I don't want to spoil it for anyone. I don't even remember what it's called. Maybe Jake could look it up and chime in. But it was just out this weekend with Matthew McConaughey. But he, one of the premises that like he is this kingpin of a black market, like marijuana thing in UK. Super interesting. The way that the video, the movie cut, and like the way that the whole storyline was. And I told Alex, our videographer, I was like, dude, you have to see it from like a director perspective. I haven't seen something totally unique in a long time.
You don't remember the name of
like
it?
I think, well, Jake's gonna check it out and chime in, but I think that even if you don't really like the preview, like go watch the movie, because it's so interesting how it's laid out.
Yeah, well, in maybe a couple Jake's years when in a couple years, because right now I have a 8-month-old and a 5-year-old, I will be able to see it. It'll be on HBO or something. I'll be able to watch it, but I haven't seen a movie in a theater in a long time.
There he is.
Called
The Gentleman.
Okay.
Yes. So you have hold on a second. You have an 8-month-old and a what?
A 5-year-old.
Oh, I thought you said a 5-month-old. I was like, this is like, you got two wives.
No, I'm not sure this is much better. I mean, a 5-year-old and a 8-month-old.
I have a two and a half year old. Almost 3, and then Lachlan's birthday is actually today.
Wow.
So he's 1 year old. So almost 3 and a 1 year old. So I get it.
Yeah. Yeah. I get a lot of parenting advice.
You have babysitters?
Yeah. And you know, one of the reasons why we're in Illinois is my family's around. So that helps to have that support system. But I get a lot of parenting advice for our youngest. And it's like, dude, I've done this already. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what you tell me. It's all.
What advice, or like what's on your mind as far as like, let's say like professionals having kids and like we have to work a lot, like what are your thoughts on that? Like how do you deal with it?
You know, I've noticed it in myself, and I've noticed it in my friends who have had kids. There's something about that extra responsibility. It really, you have to figure out a way to mellow yourself out and to deal with that stress. And that's something that's difficult for a lot of us just in the workplace in general. So just something that I've picked up on this is kind of like figuring out how to deal with my stress levels at home, which has actually helped me in the office in dealing with the, you know, the stresses that come with my professional career. It doesn't necessarily make it easier having two sources of stress, but there's something about getting thrown into that situation. You have to figure it out and something about that life skill can really apply elsewhere. So,
what's worked for you, man?
It's slowing down. Definitely slowing down. And just that patience is so critical. I mean, my kids are sharp. I mean, they're awesome. But it still takes a little time to figure some stuff out. And it kind of feels like we're both testing each other. You know, like how a caged animal kind of like checks out the bars stuff. That's basically how it is. So
we see her testing us, like when she'll cry because she wants something. And in my mind, I'm just like, oh, we're going to do this for 20 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, of course I win. Right. Of course I win.
Right.
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 Unless you can't just say that.
You can't just say that. Although I've said that. I've said, you know, this is not going to work. But it just doesn't. You have to figure out a different way to do it. And you have to think, okay, that would work for me, a purely logical human. But this is a 5-year-old I'm dealing with. What's going to work best for them? And so
I know what are they into at 5?
Well, my daughter is super into unicorns, and
there we go, right there.
Oh, there you go. Yeah,
purple unicorn. Yeah,
and princesses, and we don't know how that happened. We have no idea. Like we don't push, you know, the whole Disney princess thing, but somehow they're their own person, and it's really interesting to see that kind of develop.
Isn't that amazing how like you think like before you have kids, you're like, oh, those parents shaped them. And then when you have kids, you're like, oh my God, this is like this human's like pre-programmed with like this whole personality that there's no way they could have learned that anywhere. Like they definitely didn't learn that watching anything. Like they just have that inside of them. It's like their soul, you know?
Yeah. There's some nature versus nurture there at work. But yeah, I don't. It's great. I mean, I'm looking forward to seeing my oldest, Linnea, she's 5, and our son Cooper, he's 8 months. And I'm just jazzed to like see him grow up and, you know, hang out with them and just kind of figure out how they see the world. And yeah, I don't know. I like it.
I recommend them too. I mean, they're difficult and amazing, but there's a net positive, right?
Yes. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, I had the girl first and then the boy. I was actually like thinking last night, and I make notes sometimes. I do some like reflection stuff. And I was thinking like, what do I want to learn so that I can then teach them? Because he just turned 1. And and so I was like, all right, well, I learned maybe some like archery, maybe like I've never been hunting. I'm like super nerd, engineer, introverted for like 99% of my life until this podcast. Yeah. I was like, maybe I'll go outside. maybe I'll go outside and like learn how to shoot a bow. And then I found that there's like bow shooting classes like in my town for like $20. I was like, all right, maybe if I go learn how to shoot a bow, I could like take him on a camping trip and like teach him how to shoot a bow. And that could be kind of like a good experience.
Yeah.
You know?
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You got to figure out if they're going to like it or not. Like we've tried to get her out to, you know, go camping or snowboarding. I really want to take her out snowboarding, and we're just not there yet. And you don't want to push it on them, because then they're going to hate it, especially if it's something that's difficult. You got to figure out, you know, how do we do this in a way that they enjoy the actual, the journey of figuring this out, you know, and not thinking, oh, you know, we watched this cool video on archery or something, you should be able to do that right away. No. Takes a lot of practice, and you gotta, you know, be okay with that.
Yeah, discipline is definitely like I was trying to, and I'm sure you've thought about this too. But like as a parent, I've been trying to think like, you know, what heuristic or what methodology like should I raise my like kids under, and like what, you know, what principles? And the one that I came up with that I like the most is, I don't care what you do as long as you do it well.
Yeah.
Like, because achieving mastery of one thing lets you understand how much work it is to achieve mastery of something.
Right. And I think that heuristic really instills the value of hard work, right? To be able to say, look, whatever you want to do, that's great. You just strive to be the best you can at it. You know, don't give up. Keep working on it. So.
Yeah, because you've been programming in a long time, right?
Yeah.
Like. Yeah, so you and I both know, like, once you get to the top, you realize that, like, it's just the experts arguing about best practices.
Totally.
But to make that journey takes you almost a decade. Like you can't get that on day one. Like someone can tell you it and you can know the words to say, but you don't have the feeling and the experience of knowing what it's actually like until you do it.
Yeah. Actually, I was just thinking about this because I was asked to clear a LaCroix box from my window over here. And I've got some books that are over here. What you don't see are the books that those are great books. And they're basically like high level, like, you know, how to write pragmatic software, you know, basically like high level stuff. How do you work in teams? Things like that. My monitor is resting on all of these books that at one point I've read that are like low level, you know, JUnit or Hibernate and stuff that I don't want to say it was a waste of money, but at that time I wasted so much time going so deep into that one thing that I wasn't able to look above and there's more valuable things that I was kind of missing out on. So that took a while for me to figure out, like sticking your head up from like examining a library, what you can do with it to kind of understand, okay, well, how does that fit in the whole ecosystem? What can I learn from this library that this other library does differently? So going a little bit too deep, maybe. I wish I would have learned that sooner.
But like not so shallow that you're hopping like entire languages and never like learning how one language fully works though.
Right, exactly. And you know, I'm at a point, I'm sure you're at a point too, where you don't necessarily, you can see the commonalities between languages. And once you get the gist of what this one does or how this database works, there's some questions that you can answer. Like, okay, well, I know that like Mongo does it like this. This new database, how does it handle that? And you're asking more intelligent questions that get you to that answer faster than if you were just, you know, in starting out in a vacuum.
And then there's like the humbling of there will always be a new technology. There will always be doing something new and you don't know. And there's no way you as one individual can consume it. And hopefully by that time, you've gotten to the point where you're like leading a team and you can bring people together to create something greater than the sum of you, right?
Totally. Yeah, and in consulting, so what we do, the next project we get, we don't know who it's coming from. We don't know necessarily what's going to be. A lot of our constraints that we have in terms of designing a system are, what is the staff going to look like that's going to be taking this technology on once we're gone, or what? How is this going to integrate with their existing solution? So, it totally depends on who the client is. But in the past year, I've written a few Rails projects and, you know, Go projects, .NET projects, and kind of having that agility is really necessary in our you know, particular industry. So that's one of the things that we look for when we hire engineers too, is we need basically generalists that are really good at having that breadth of knowledge, but when needed to, they can go deep and figure out, you know, for that particular technology that we're working on for that project, let's figure out everything we can about it so we can address, you know, whatever the thing is we're trying to debug or whatever else. But that's something that takes time at the scale that takes a long time.
So last week I got into this like rant with this CTO that was doing like a lot of mergers and acquisitions, right? And he had a pretty strong like finance background that he had developed from having to do these different mergers and acquisitions, and we were talking about that. And then I started thinking, like, I know all these different CTOs, all these levels, and I want to know now, like, how much P&L responsibilities are you exposed to at your level?
A lot. A lot. A lot of my days are spent working on proposals, working on estimates, and kind of understanding what the budget is, what our customer's budget is. One of the things that I'm really excited about with what Connemara is doing now is we are traditionally a consulting firm. We're not a products company, or at least we have not been traditionally, but we keep solving the same problems over and over again. So what we're starting to do is to develop our own off-the-shelf kind of platform to be able to allow the next customer to build their exchange faster, because we have some parts that we want to be able to reuse for that next customer. So we started to have to think more like how our customers have been thinking about this product that I'm going to be building, this platform. How much time and money do we want to spend this year to implement this feature? What do we think we're going to get out of it? Whose problem are we solving? How much more business are we going to be getting? So I get exposed to a lot of that. And I think part of that is just because having been here for a long time and just being comfortable with the executive team, because of what we do, the engineering voice is important in all of that. And so I get involved in a lot of that discussion.
So is that what Quick Fix is, like the precursor to, or is that something else?
So Quick Fix is an open source library, and there's actually a lot of flavors of it. So the original one was written by Orrin Miller, and it was C++, and that's something that Jim, our CEO, helped with. He actually wrote the acceptance tests for Quick Fix. But Quick Fix is basically just a library it's an open source library for facilitating what's known as the fixed protocol. This is a financial language for like sending data about sending orders or trades or market data. Before Orrin wrote QuickFix, there was no open source library for that. So when he did that, which is fantastic, he did a great job. People were using a lot of wrappers around that for whatever language they needed to. And from that spawned QuickFix J, which is a Java version. And we wrote QuickFix.net, which is a .NET version. And then recently QuickFix Go, which is a Go implementation of that. But it's just an open source library for fixed protocol. A lot of the projects that we've done in the past, we've been able to leverage open source technologies to build software much more cost effectively than if we were licensing everything. So where we can, we like to give back and look towards open sourcing what we can to give back to the community.
And you did that at Microsoft too, right?
A little bit, yeah. So I was at Microsoft for about 4 months, not very long. This was
it counts for the resume, man. It counts.
I had a blue badge. I was a blue badger. This was it doesn't exist anymore, but there's a division at Microsoft called Open Tech, and they were really interested in open source technologies and kind of being evangelists for what Microsoft could do for open source software and where Microsoft fit into that. So I was involved in that I was a program manager, again, for like 4 months, mostly involved in the IoT space and trying to show how you can use Azure for these IoT, you know, devices to use the cloud software. And then also, I believe they're doing some work at the device level to install Windows 10 or something. But what was encouraging is that Microsoft was fully on their way to already, you know, being open source first in-house, be more comfortable in that space. So that division closed shortly after I left. But that was something that I was really passionate about. I don't know if I would have gone to Microsoft if it wasn't for that particular program that I was involved in.
Yeah, the IoT stuff is like really exploding nowadays.
Yeah, and this was back, it was about 6 or 7 years ago where it was really starting. I mean, it's still in many ways like the Wild West. And we were debating about different messaging systems and, you know, IBM MQ or all kinds of different methodologies for things. And I don't know how much closer we are to that. I think now there's a lot of security stuff that's coming up, you know, like all of the concerns about the Ring doorbell and everything. It's good discussions to have, and I wish that would have happened sooner.
What do you mean?
Doorbell? Just, you know, just the privacy things. You've got all these devices that are monitoring.
What are you talking about, privacy?
Yeah. Well, some of us are a little more concerned than others, I think.
I have recording devices in every room I'm in.
Do you?
I've got Alexas all through the house, you know.
Oh, do you? Okay.
And we have a studio. So there's a video studio in the other room. We make these management programs for technologists. It's pretty cool.
Okay.
Like if you want to manage your team better, usually people like you will buy them for like your managers, right?
Okay.
But so we have a video studio, we do that. We've got about 8 people here outside. Get my hand up there outside that door.
Yeah.
But what I want to know what the Ring got off topic. I want to know what the Ring, what's the discussion around the Ring? Because I know I have one. And I know that I can like see my neighbors because there's like bobcats in my neighborhood and stuff all the time, like, and they're ruining gutters, trying to eat the rabbits that are hiding in the gutters. And there's video of them.
Really?
Yeah.
I would watch that.
Yeah.
I would watch that. That sounds good.
Dude, yeah. So it's, but it's weird to me because like there's an app and my wife brought it up to me and I was just like, you know, I'm pretty chill with the automation because it's like a ball that we know is happening, but like, what am I going to, like, I can't stop it. I'm assuming you'd have to be in like law or legislature to try to do something. But anyways, in 10 years, we're going to be there anyways. Right.
Right.
But she had this app and she came up to me and she's like, oh, check it out. You know, those noises you heard. She's like, oh, look, the neighbors got them on a bobcat. And I was like, oh, would you like, how'd you get access to this? She's like, oh, it's just an app. And she goes, if you own a Ring doorbell, it's just going to show you all your neighbors near you.
Yeah.
I was like, what? I was like, there's no, like, I want to see Jen's, you know, neighbor, my neighbor, Jen, I want to see her camera. Like we have to exchange. No, it's just open. Like you can just go around and see everyone in my neighborhood's doorbell cam.
Yeah. Yeah, that's part of it. We're kind of bringing the surveillance state into our neighborhoods. Our neighborhood is very funny because there's a big, I mean, it's not super funny, but there's a big concern about coyotes. Coyotes are all over Chicago and the Chicagoland area. And so there's always an alert. Hey, I was walking my dog and there's a coyote. Every single night, there's an alert about a coyote.
Are there attacks? Do you guys have coyote attacks?
I don't think so. I think they're afraid of us. Certainly we have a Ring doorbell and we have a fairly busy street and, whenever there's motion in our motion zones, that information is going up somewhere. And it's, you know, my neighbors who never agreed to be on camera and have their internet, you know, their identity on the internet and showing their faces and things. And all it's going to take is someone to scan some faces and that's a lot of data out there. So I don't know. I'm not a super paranoid guy, but.
You know, if you want to be paranoid, you know who I think is going to get it the worst? The delivery guys.
Oh yeah.
Right. Because their faces are going to be the most like recognized. So they're going to have the most opportunity. They're going to be in the database the longest and have the most opportunity for error. I want to see the graph of like crimes committed or like found, like identified through facial recognition mapped to like what their profession is.
Yeah.
Because the more you're on camera, the more likely, right?
Yeah.
There's got to be some correlation.
No, I agree. And I feel bad because postal workers, that's a stressful job as it is. And now they're going up to houses and like, oh God, I gotta be on camera for this now. I'm just trying to deliver this mail. And they gotta all be day. Like, their face is right up to the doorbell, you know? Yeah. But still, I love it.
Oh man, this is great. So like, what does your team look like? Like how many, do you have direct reports? Like what do they look like?
So my direct report, I do have direct reports technically, but they're my peers. I mean, I've been working with the same guys for, a lot of them have been here for just as long as I have. But having said that, I mean, we've hired guys recently in the past 3 or 4 years and, you know, technically they are my direct reports, but when they're on a project, we like to put people together. So there's at least teams of two or three, but they are interacting directly with the customer. So they have a lot of responsibilities and that's, you know, kind of who we like to hire is people who enjoy that responsibility. So in terms of me managing them, it's more, what can I do for them? How can I provide mentorship abilities or what is it that they need to succeed? Not at the current position necessarily, but you know, beyond. Because we get people that are pretty young and we know this isn't their first and only job. They're probably going to continue here and use this as a springboard to something else. And we're okay with that. That's great. That's fantastic that we have these skilled people that want to come here and learn and get familiar with capital market space while learning tons of like interesting technology and figuring out exactly what they want to do. So it's weird because I've had good managers. Actually my boss Jim is fantastic. I mean, he's really helped me kind of figure out what I want to do with my career. And that's how I want to help out our guys. They don't need, someone to parent them and you know, make sure that they're doing whatever they need to do. I trust them. That's why they're here. So it's whatever I can do to help them succeed, I guess.
No, I mean, I love hearing that. We were just talking about this yesterday. So we started the podcast and then a leadership company came out of it. Right. Because people were saying, oh, you know, we hear these leaders, how do we get them, our leaders, to do those types of things? And we're like, all right, well, we'll great leadership challenges. And so we're about 2 years into it now. And we were having a meeting the other day, and we were saying, all right, like, let's look at our best customers. Like, who are our best customers and what commonalities do they have between them? You know, it's like a startup, right? Because we want more of those types of people, because they're having success with the product. And what we've learned, like, the short of it is their company culture is everything. Like, the companies that have the culture that they care and they want to improve, they do well with our product. And like, we can't take people that don't want to improve and give them a product that makes them better. They just don't, it's like they won't do anything with it, and they won't have success with it. But it's important though, because here's why. Like, they will go around, right, and say it doesn't work. Like the purchaser, right? Like, they could purchase it, and their people don't use it, and then they could go around and be like, oh, you know, it doesn't, you know, work. We haven't had this. We were just talking about this the other day. It's like, you want customers, and you want to be really good at identifying them, because everyone talks no matter what. And so you want them going around saying, this is the best system in the world. We love it. We recommend it. And then we want more of those types of customers. So we've finally gotten to the point where, like, we can tell in our sales process when we don't want a customer.
Yeah.
And that's okay. Yeah. Yeah. And we can say no to, we can say no to a customer, or just, like, discourage them from, you know, buying it.
Yeah. Yeah. We're in the same space. I don't know that. No, I'll say, I think we've always been in the space where we can recognize up front, like you're saying, is this risky? Is this a relationship we want to be in? And, you know, business is good enough where we can say that. And we know that we're going to turn this one away because it doesn't feel like the right thing. We're going to open ourselves up so that we have the availability when the next good customer comes our way, who understands what this work relationship will be like. So that it's tough to say no sometimes, but you're right. I mean, you have to kind of know when to walk away from stuff like that.
Oh, don't get me wrong. It's a total optimization thing. Like, it's after you get your base costs, like, met, right? Like, you definitely have to take everybody at the beginning, and you have to go through that learning process. And then, like, it's not always a straight shot up. Like, you can be doing well, and then it just, and then sometimes you're like, well, we really need the money, so we'll take this customer and then try to figure out how to get them as much success as possible.
Right.
But that's what makes it fun, right? If it was just a straight ride to the top, like, if you could just flip a switch and just start having immediate success indefinitely, like, there would be people who would, like, not flip the switch because they would be just bored.
Yeah. And again, I mean, I think that that's one of the fun things about the job is to not be bored, right? That's just the fun thing about doing engineering and software is there's so many opportunities to kind of improve and to learn new things that we didn't sign up to be bored. It's not what we do. Yeah.
So as we start to wrap up, what's the rest of your day look like?
Well, we do weekly iterations. So in about 9 minutes here, I got to jump. And we're going to do feature estimations for a next iteration for our Exchange platform. So we're kind of rolling out some new functionality that we want to estimate, because we basically keep track of our team velocity to figure out how much work can get done every week with the given team that we have. So it'll be a probably long meeting going into features, really challenging each other and making sure we understand exactly what's being asked of us to develop, you know, fun agile stuff. So unfortunately today is a long meeting, but then hopefully once that's wrapped up, we'll know exactly what we need to do. And I'm going to probably play more of a Batman role and help where we need help to kind of improve our process. I like to give the feature functionality to the engineers who are most involved in it. And I'm just trying to assist them where I can.
So you, like, start the meeting, sort of set the tone, and then just let them do their thing.
Exactly. Yeah. Again, nice. We're all adults.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the important thing is that, you know, we have standards. Like, we set ourselves in an environment where we know that, like, that's the most productive way to work. And so we adjust our environment to have a bunch of adults in it that, like, people want to come in, do good work, complete things, get things done, move the world forward. And then, you know, the biggest thing when people are asking me, oh, my team's like this or that or whatever, I was like, you're in the wrong place. Like, if you're not that type of person and everyone else is, then just go find groups of people that are like you that want to get good work done and not like have issues.
We're a small company. I mean, there's 8 engineers, that's including myself. And we have a lot of contractors that we work with as well. But one of the things that Jim has been doing, which I didn't get at the beginning, but now I totally get, is we have to just start thinking like a big company. How would we franchise this if we wanted to franchise it? And that gets back to figuring out what is our culture? What are the operations? What are the policies and procedures for what does this meeting mean? And once we get that kind of written out somewhere, people read it once and they say, oh, I get it. I know why we're doing this. I got it from here. I know exactly what I need to accomplish today. And that's been something that we've been doing the past year and a half. And I think it's been to our benefit, certainly just, you know, codifying what it is we do here every day.
Well, I want to make sure you're not late to that meeting, but Chris, man, we did it. We made a podcast. How was it? Your first podcast. How was it?
It was great. It's great. 10 out of 10.
Like a hangout. 10 out of 10. We just like hanging out, talking, right? Yeah.
I feel like we figured out awesome. A lot of things today. It's good stuff.
We did. Yeah. We took care of the world today.
You're welcome, world.
You're welcome, world. No more hello. Now it's your welcome world.
That's right.
So I love the pizza there. Next time I'm in and around that area, are you like in the city of Chicago? Are you right outside?
I'm right outside, but right outside. I'm practically in the city. So.
Okay. Cool. So yeah, I was actually there like 5 times last year. So
nice. Yeah, come on out. Don't come
next time I'm there. We'll have some pizza.
Don't come right now. Wait a few months.
No. Yeah, I'm from Florida. I'm in Florida and I'm wearing my Columbia jacket. Yeah, because it's like 70 degrees. All right, my friend. Next time I'm out there, I'll let you know. Maybe we'll grab some food or something.
Cool. Sounds good, man.
All right. Have a great day, buddy.
You too.
Bye-bye. See ya. Bye.